Season 6, Episode 14, From the Club to the Courtroom. Warning, content is suggestive of sexual harassment and it includes a reference to a suicide case. Listener discretion is advised. As always, Trage presents a United Kingdom judgment involving a lawyer hiring a student as his legal secretary. Well, they met in a gentleman's club where she worked as an exotic dancer to fund her studies. This reeks of people in power, suggests Sarah. Oh, you can't do that, deplores Alan, even if it is intended as a joke. Sarah references this to the episode in season 4, that is season 4, episode 8, the archaic adage of deserving a good spanking. Yes, you heard it first here on Why Work.
Welcome to the system.
Yeah, 1, 2, kid, this is B, R4D, and we're gonna bust it up like this. I'm crushing empty bourbon cans with my dirty hands, poisoned by devil's weed, dreaming off foreign lands. Ever since my very spark of life, I've been caught in this astrological plight.
Hello, and welcome to the Why Work Podcast, a series of playful legal dissections on the most curious and alarming events in the world of work. The podcasters Alan Girl, Trage Svetkovsky, and Sarah Pazell debate how to craft a better experience of work. Sit back, relax, and enjoy. And remember, none of the things we talk about today should be construed as legal advice or any other type of advice. We're just here to talk about all things related to work. I want to bring in a very interesting case to the table. From Mother England.
Mother England.
It's a reported decision.
Okay.
But I'll read the extracts from the Law Society's Gazette, which is a very good gazette for those who are English solicitors. And I'll read the head note, because that'll say it all.
Oh, which court was it in first?
It was in the Employment Court. So equivalent to our employment-type tribunal, so Fair Work-type commission, so comparable jurisdiction. So Employment Court, and the headline, and I'll descend into the facts in a minute, was simply, Playboy dancer recruited by solicitor awarded almost £30,000.
Okay, so I guess I'm going to say it again. Playboy dancer recruited by a solicitor is awarded £30,000, which is like, what, 60 grand US?
Yeah,
Australian, sorry.
Grand. Okay, a law student recruited by a solicitor at the Playboy Casino in London is owed almost £29,000, an employment tribunal found.
Now, hold on a second. Don't rush to the end. So what's the... She was... You started off with Playboy dancer.
Mm.
So she was dancing in a strip club.
Who also happened to be a law graduate.
Okay.
Yeah, she's a law graduate and she's a dancer. Like we said, you could have a day job of any conservative nature and then might have OnlyFans content creator.
Okay, but I think the link here is the solicitor met her at the strip club.
Yes, it's
not
likely.
Not in law, and not in the framework of law, right?
That's right.
Okay. He didn't meet her as part of the graduate program or something.
No, the decision doesn't descend into that level of particularity, but I think it's fair to surmise that indeed the interview took place at the casino. So the venue is...
So I'm not worldly wise enough, but in the UK, do they have strip clubs at casinos?
Well, I don't know. I'm looking at the picture. It's simply called Casino Playboy Club London. Playboy Club London, law graduate.
But hold on a second. The solicitor, when he employs her, are we leaping to him employing her as a law graduate, or do we know that?
One job or another?
It depends on the context of the employment. So what was she employed as?
As a law graduate.
As a law graduate.
On a part-time basis.
Okay, I just need to get the facts. Mm.
She was approached by the solicitor, referred to as AD. Let's not call him Alan.
So Barbara and Adrian. Barbara and Adrian, right? Okay, we got Barbara, is that safe? Can I use Barbara? Nobody's got a daughter named Barbara.
Apologies to all the Barbaras and Adrians out there, but yes.
Yeah, all right, just for argument's sake.
Nothing wrong with that.
So not as a law clerk.
She's a law graduate.
No, but that's not the basis upon which she was employed.
No.
Well, let's just stick to the fact.
She's a defense lawyer.
Let's break it down to this. She was employed as an employee of a solicitor's firm. Will you accept that? Yeah. Well, I'll get to the position description, because the solicitor invited Pierre
about, well, the interview was a dinner.
Interviews over dinner. Okay, Barbara and Adrian are going to dinner.
Yeah, business right. lunches, dinners, that's cool.
Red flag should have gone up at that point.
Okay. Well, there were lots of red flags, including WhatsApp chats, etc., but we'll get to those in a minute.
Okay.
However, and she does, and look, to her credit, I'm jumping a bit now, to her credit, she did admit at the time it was a bit odd and she feels quite foolish about it. You should never have to feel that as a victim. You should never have to feel that it's somehow your fault.
You should have known, you could have done better, right?
Because, you know, you're taking a job in good faith.
And the power disparity, we've talked about that.
Yeah, we'll get to the power disparity in the
tip. All right.
So the solicitor invited BR to dinner, telling her...
Barbara,
and this is where it gets a bit weird, telling her to look classy... And then offered her a base salary of £14,000 per year. Now, remember, this is a part-time job. There is nothing wrong with that pay. I worked in England. That's about right.
28,000 Australian, roughly 30,000 Australian, part-time.
For legal secretary. I mean,
secretarial work.
The Crown Prosecutor, they're recently advertising a job. It's like about £113,000 for the national, like, you know, DPP, the head of DPP.
Well, so, okay, it's starting to get odd here. Employed as a personal assistant. Then her role would not be about going out and mingling with clients. But now she's being told she has to get dressed up and look nice.
Yes, she's being told.
For the interview though, right?
Yeah, but it gets better. The base salary of £14,000 per year plus a bonus of 10%. Fine.
Okay.
She was expected to pick up clients. Now remember, as a personal legal secretary, part of your job may be to pick up clients.
Not in Australia.
Yeah, but it's England, so it might be different. It looked.
You guys got put through the ringer for the rites of passage, you know, to do kinds of funny things.
So she was expected to pick up clients at night.
Okay.
When they visited high-end restaurants and bars.
That's... You wouldn't see that happen in Australia, so that's okay. Getting very unusual.
It's getting very personal, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, it's not really matching the job that she was recruited for.
Keep going.
Well, yeah... I suppose, but I kind of think if you hear all sorts of stories about persons in both male and female and expecting their subordinates to do all sorts of things like pick up hand cream or go and do my lotto or whatever, I don't read too much into that, though, Alan, although I respect what you're saying.
Hollywood personal assistants get asked to do all kinds of things.
If that's outside the scope of your role, then it's outside the scope of your role.
So, but I kind of think, given that, look, he says, personal legal secretary, I'll give you instructions and you get paid for it. Yeah, that's interesting that you say that there are red flags.
People in power. Robert De Niro thought he could ask anything of his personal assistant, you know, and this was a big, dramatic case.
He did,
but at the time, there was assumed privilege, is all I'm saying.
And this is where the story just descends. So if it's not creepy enough as it is now, wait to hear this. She was told at the interview by this solicitor that he was God and she is an obedient little slave creature.
Oh. Ooh.
Boom. That's it. It's all over.
Welcome to the system.
You going?
Can't make... Even if that was intended as a joke, you can't make that kind
of... So the judge concluded that the solicitor acted entirely inappropriately towards the claimant and that she was employed by him.
May I ask, did you need to dance in tradie underwear with a leaf blower blowing your hair?
Well,
sexual harassment. Are you told what that is?
Well, that looking classy, that you're a slave. So it doesn't have to be... There were no actual acts of physical...
These were
it's an interesting point because the communication and of what you're expected to do is very critical because... Under the Employment Rights Act, there was no issue with the complainant or the claimant in this case being deemed to be an employee, though there was no written contract.
Yes. The offending conduct, though, was that very foolish remark that he's made. And the asking her to collect clients at night.
Yes, so the foolish remarks were, of course, I'm God, you're a slave. Look classy when you're picking up clients. I'm taking you to a proper place. So all these demeaning and derogatory.
There's an innuendo in that when you say I'm taking you to a proper.
Like you come from low class scum area and I'm bringing you up market.
Yeah. Also, I'm taking you somewhere special. He's taking her somewhere.
Right. Yes. And now where it's really humiliating, that's not bad enough. The reason why he explained why he was God and that why she needed to be an obedient little slave creature was because this was the only way she would learn and achieve her potential.
So he's helping her out, of course, right? Can't you see that?
So now there's a sad twist in this case, and before we get to that, to be fair to the lawyer, there's no suggestion that he touched her.
No.
Or anything worse. So there was no physical contact.
No, it was
contact.
It was merely the conduct of through the words used and generally his attitude, which is where these allegations of victimisation and sexual harassment arose. So it's important for our listeners to understand you could be sort of mucking around, joking and thinking to yourself, well, I didn't touch that person or I didn't call them, you know, a so-and-so or this. I was just saying, look, I'm God because look where I've got to and you've got to be the obedient slave.
Well, we're old enough that we saw the culture change in the 90s, and a lot of men struggled in the 90s who had very paternalistic attitudes that were completely unacceptable, and they struggled in that transformation. He's 80, isn't he, at the time?
I'm not sure of his age.
Oh, okay.
No, I'm not sure of his age. They don't go into that detail, and I think out of respect for the for I guess all the parties, they didn't want to go into the antecedents too much. I mean, it's probably fair to infer, given his status, that he would have been much older. However,
it was a sad twist.
Yes, the solicitor has since passed. He died before the judgment.
So is that sad for her, you mean?
No, it's sad for him and his family. And it's sad that this judgment has, notwithstanding that he's de-identified, everyone in the legal profession over there would know who he is.
Of course, of course. Mm. Yeah.
That's a really good point you raise, because the ramifications of your behaviour and your conduct could far exceed. So your reputation would go beyond, is that everyone will know. And as you've always said, Alan, with the internet, things are permanent.
And I sadly see this regularly in my job.
That's right. So apart from just with the adage where there's smoke, there's fire, and even if you can't see the fire, unfortunately,
it's the prosecutor talking.
No,
it's enough. The damage is done. So in this case, though, it was established that he had made these comments, so her evidence was preferred. A couple of witnesses were called from who I think corroborated her version of, because she'd also taken action against the law firm, and that failed.
So she
That's what I want. Now I want to fast forward to the end. So she took action. It failed. She didn't get anything from the law firm.
The judgment was against him. So he's obviously had the ability to.
He would have been insured.
Correct. Yeah.
So he's but he's died now.
Yeah. So
what happens to her?
Yeah.
She still got paid.
But the lessons are that you have to be very careful in the way you conduct yourself.
Very careful before you take things to a contested hearing, because in this matter we're talking about £30,000. It would have been, I can only assume, it would have been better for the law firm just to settle. That's not a huge amount of money.
Yeah. So why didn't they just
keep it quiet and settle by Australian standards?
That's a good point.
So unless there was an insurance company driving it along.
Yeah.
But even if there was, the law firm still could have said, no, we'll settle this ourselves, you know, insurance company, go away.
Yeah. Just let's keep this quiet. Let's close this.
And get the published judgment, which they now have.
And the linkage now to her, you started this by talking about her other work. So connect this.
Well, the connection is simply that it seems to have been a case of a person in a position of power, or somebody who is able to exert, in this case, his authority, of God, and I can create any position for you, and therefore somehow...
He knew where her other workplace was?
Oh, no, he definitely knew where the other workplace was, but he construed that...
Because he employed her at the other workplace.
Yeah. Oh, I missed that.
Irrespective of her day job or night job as a dancer, this person was a law graduate who was studying for her diploma to work as a practitioner. Now, you know how bad the situation is, Alan. Anyone with a law degree will do, i.e. become a legal secretary, just to get into the law firm. So I see it as somebody who perhaps saw an opportunity to finally get a job as a law. I mean, whilst we're just studying for a law degree.
Trying to legitimise herself, you mean? Trying to legitimise her career opportunities?
And I think he's taken advantage of her aspirations.
And vulnerabilities. And,
But it's interesting that he only really, when you distill it down...
Can I acknowledge that? But the point in time where there was the least difference in power was at the moment of employment. So if he wanted to employ her to look pretty for clients and make him look more impressive because he had a pretty chauffeur for his clients or company at the table, that should have been part of the discussion. It should have been upfront discussed. And then the salary would have reflected that.
Well, no, they did. They did descend into it. So when she first met the respondent at the Playboy Casino to discuss the legal secretary position, she made notes during the meeting. She says she was offered a base salary of £14,000 per year plus a bonus of 10% plus 5% of what the first respondent billed and received. Now, the first respondent, who is the solicitor, said he charged £225 per hour. She was told not to wear shiny tights. First thing is, you can't... having a go at someone's dress sense and attributes, so don't wear shiny tights. He also told her that he saw a lot of potential in her. So this is that grooming aspect of when you're in a position of power. Now, you might say, well, that's not enough. Potential.
Or breadcrumbing, like narcissistic breadcrumbing.
Because you have to say, yes, because you've got to put this in the context of be classy and, you know, all these... And it's at the Playboy Casino.
Upmarket entertainment.
And he saw a lot of potential in her and that her background in West End hospitality, as she would be able to entertain and work alongside high net worth clients.
Now, was she expected to have sex with them, Trish?
Well, here's the thing. I don't think that's an unfair
assumption
that you're going with this. She was expected to pick up clients at night when they visited high-end restaurants and bars.
Lawyers do entertain their clients, but that doesn't sound like what would normally happen in a legal practice.
So I wonder if she was misrepresented or, the position was... Well, she was being groomed for perhaps another position. She did say, though, the respondent... Look, well, he was a partner in the firm, so that straight away. So he wasn't just, say, a senior solicitor. He was a partner in the firm, so that's a high position of power in a London office, and that's the engine room of the, probably one of the world legal systems. So he's in a position of power. He's in a London office. He's actively involved in recruitment and hiring of every employee and consultant. So he is the fire and hirer. Given that the respondent was not able to give evidence, there is a firm WhatsApp group which the claimant was not invited to join. It appears that
he excluded her
from various things. Some of the witnesses weren't able to, in giving the witnesses for the law firm, weren't able to give a full picture because he kept a tight, itinerary on what she would do and what not would do. And, of course, he could do that because he was a partner in the law firm.
I can't help but reflect on our season 4 recording about military spanking of a subordinate.
Alan, that's not too dissimilar, is it? You've got to.
I think if you could wind the clock back and you were able to advise him, you'd say just don't do it. This is crazy. This will get you in trouble.
And sometimes people think they're above the law.
Yeah, well, that's right. I think that's good for some listeners is that if you've got any doubt about a relationship, just don't do it. And in this particular case, because he passed away, I want to be very careful not to make any assumptions.
No. Now, the thing is, it's you said for our listeners, I'd actually refine that to say for our C-suite listeners, because whilst the judge said this was an extraordinary decision, I guess inferring unusual or rare, remember in our previous seasons we talked about doctors, psychiatrists and who this is not that rare or unusual. There seems to be a number of cases where persons in a very privileged or a high position of power are able to utilise their
serotonin status. Going back to those neurobehavioral drivers.
It's got to be changing. It'd be lovely to hear some stats on whether this particular type of behaviour is diminishing.
Look, you would think it would be diminishing, but we've already mentioned before that you've acknowledged that WorkCover Queensland has had issues of bullying in their own workplace, right? You've sent me an article about EY, workplace bullying. Tell us a little bit about EY.
Oh, we... We only know what's in the media. And,
so, all right, so it's not a case, it's just that. Media, it's just media reporting, OHS alert.
I haven't been following it closely enough to know whether that's been finalised, but it's fairly typical of the top end of town where the expectation of workers is to work incredibly long hours, absolutely incredibly long hours.
And what is EY? Tell us about EY for those listeners that aren't familiar.
That's an accountancy-based business. But the same could be said of law firms, mm-hmm. and some other businesses as well. Not every single law firm, but just some of the bigger ones. And
they're also workplace organizational strategists, people advisory. It's not just accounting. It's actually advising about workplace practices.
And some of those law firms have been in the media for exactly the same thing.
Okay.
And you hear stories about young
PwC.
Lawyers.
You got PwC, Deloitte, EY, KPMG, all in similar services.
Well, it's in the media. That doesn't necessarily mean it's true. But you certainly hear stories about young lawyers working very, very long days, in excess of, might be in excess of 20 hours.
Yes.
They basically go home, have a shower, and then return to work. That's just simply not sustainable.
I've been to some of the organizations that say, well, hey, we know that there's seasons where we're working excessively, so we provide fruit, and we have a concierge, almost like a butler, to help provide coffees and services for clients, and we have dinners also provided to them. We're like, well, but hang on, so now you're saying, again, workload management, are you supposed to, is this an acceptable season of work, or is it so excessive everybody just hanging on and barely crossing the line?
We just have to look at the architecture. I've been to a number of high-end or blue-chip law firms, and this practice came around the late 90s where suddenly there'd be a chef down the bottom and you'd order whatever you like, sushi, and your meal would be brought up. There'd be like an army of servants providing your meal, and the whole point was so you could sit at your desk and work.
And keep working.
So sustenance was provided, and I've been to a couple of these firms when there was like a ice hockey or a little air hockey, those air hockey machines, and bean bags and a coffee machine and any food that you wanted from the buffet. And it dawned on me, oh, that's so you can stay in the office and not step out for an hour or so, get a bit of sunshine. So
you remember the movie The Devil's Advocate with Al Pacino?
I
love that movie, right?
Yeah, was when all that came out, all that kind of stuff.
Right, yeah, where it's just like everything, your soul is given over to the law firm, that kind of sentiment.
So that's
so these are not just law firms. We're talking about business consultancy, accounting, or organizational strategy firms as well.
Yeah. But it was more than just that seasonal work. That was more than just they would say, "Oh, listen, we've got a particular important project to do now." It was perennial. It wasn't just, oh, we've really got to get this report in.
And that's what I'm saying. It's not just that wholeness to aspire to one thing and then have recovery, restoration, and balance. It was all the time, we own you, right? That's the sentiment, like that movie.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's
And I should say, for the record, that the law firm where I currently work does not do that. It does not provide meals.
But
but these were kitchens, and I saw them. And it,
well, they've got chefs in the kitchen all the time.
And my friend who worked for one of these this is in the 90s, she's no longer working in that. She was in HR, she wasn't a lawyer. Mm. She said, it was in Sydney, so you'd call the buzzer or whatever the internet, and you'd say, sushi, and it'd be brought up. My first thought was, oh my God, lucky, is good. But of course, many years later, I realised, oh no, that's a really good way for you not to go out, whereas 6 minute
billable
increments.
6 minute increments, baby. We want your time.
There's a lot of difficult practices in those bigger organisations, but it also means that the employees are highly strung.
Yes.
So when you're trying to
cortisol, the stuff Sarah's talking about.
Yeah, it probably is a bit of that, but
Thank you. You see, I knew it would come back around. Look, can I just say, I had this major win. I'm just going to digress for a moment,
What did you say? Yeah, pathological thinking. Is that
me?
Trash.
Pathology.
Was it?
No. That's salutogenesis and pathogenesis.
Yeah,
pathogenesis.
Pathogens.
That's in health or in work, the way you dissect and analyze work. Okay, but I'm just going to digress for a moment because without spoiler alert, without telling the detail of what you're working on, trash.
a prosecuting lawyer says to me he's going to analyze a thing, a phenomenon, and guess how? Look, viewing it through empathy maps.
I've created empathy maps.
A design tool. We've had rub-off. I have success for the day. I can just rest, put my feet up for today. Hearing a past state prosecutor now saying he's going to analyze phenomenon with design tools.
And one step more, not only that, there's not only will there be the funkiest empathy map you guys have ever seen, I'm also going to do a cloud story.
Oh, cool. So,
with
like,
all the common phrases.
Mind maps and journey maps and this kind of thing.
This is
see,
it.
He's going, he's coming to my side of the fence.
Nice. Seriously, you're going to love it, Alan.
Going in the design.
You're
going to
go in this.
He's
good...
a blue blooded lawyer.
No, I've seen
it. Let's look at the facts. He lives in a mansion, drives a super fast
black
car.
Black BMW.
And his second wife is
Renee.
So, you know.
She's not my second wife.
First wife, been there forever.
And you know what? But you know why I am not that caricature that you're presenting?
He's got a cape.
I've got a cape.
He's got a cape.
Count.
How many lawyers walk around with a cape?
Due diligence, man. No. But not a cape. However, the reason why you know I'm not that is I was always suspicious of the sushi that they would offer. Beware of the blue chips offering you free food.
Let me tell you about one more bully boss fine for $60,000.
Welcome to the system.
We're talking about bullying. There's a case you've been talking about for a bully boss fine, $60,000. Now, you were saying this stuff can't still be happening. We know we have so much information about occupational psychosocial hazards, and there's so much known in workplace phenomenon that this stuff should not happen, right? We see there's nuanced cases, things like, you know, neglect. I heard about this in Nicola Noble's podcast called Safe Tea, T-E-A, where every episode we spill a little bit of tea. I thought that was a cute little... It is in the law. Bingo. All right. Cool. So, right? But something as you know, almost banal now. We know all about, you know, bullying should not happen, right? We know that. But here's another case. We've been talking about it in EY, just in the news, alleged. We've been talking about it in some extreme cases in the military or with lawyers. Here's bully boss fined $60,000 for terrorizing apprentices. Director of a Tullamarine glass company subjected two apprentices to ongoing bullying, including hoisting one of them upside down at work at a Christmas party. Here we go, that sense of oxytocin and belonging, but then serotonin status, right? Okay. Has been convicted and fined $60,000. I'm satisfied in all circumstances the respondent sustained an injury in the course of employment pursuant to, you'd love this, Section 4A of the 1987 Act.
Yeah, that kind of behavior, it used to occur a lot. I assume it still does occur. But
it's still occurring.
It should not occur.
Some of it's rites of passage still. We've been talking about that. We still need to unpack rites of passages. Here's a Christmas party gone awry, but this is...
That's the rawest form of bullying.
And this looks like it's... you have mentioned that bullying under work health safety legislation doesn't need to be a pattern, but this sounds like this was a pattern, basic employment law breaches of a pattern of terrorizing apprentices. But it culminated, this ongoing bullying culminated at the Christmas party, hoisting... an apprentice upside down at work.
Which is awful because that's
awful.
In front of the whole workforce.
Awful.
So you talked about those, yeah, that type of, whether it's hazing or whether it's,
yeah.
You know, just straight out. Yeah, it is a form of control and
use,
domination.
Abuse,
and, yeah,
domination.
Use, and victimisation.
It's a demonstration of
it's
it.
It's a demonstration, yeah. And so whilst, and the idea of this is a practical joke or why can't you handle it? Well, no. There is no room for practical jokes.
Well, the comment that lawyer
jokes.
Made, allegedly, is that you're my slave, right?
Yeah.
And a joke is funny. I don't find that funny in it at all.
No.
And it's, yeah, so it's, but I guess for us the surprise is we're not talking about things in the 70s and 80s and even the 90s or last decade. These are right now. These are decisions being handed down this week. And that's food for thought.
We hope you enjoyed that episode of Why Work. You've been listening to Trage, Sarah and Alan. And if you'd like to know more about some of the things we've talked about today, please subscribe and would be more than happy to provide you with information, names of cases, and other things that may interest you. Please be aware that none of the matters we've talked about today should be construed as legal advice or any other type of advice. We're just here to talk about all things related to work. See you next time.
What you thinking? You jumped up in the system.
Welcome to the system. Welcome to the system. Welcome to the system. Yeah. Welcome to the system.